Congress Health and Social Services Committee meeting to order. Time is 1:08 PM. Like to request roll call.
Congresswoman Edwards? Speaker Pratt?
That's it.
Congressman Walker?
Here.
Congresswoman Whitehorn?
Here.
Congressman Shaw?
Here.
Heavenly Father, we thank you for your blessing of this day and this time to come together as members of the Osage government representing our people, Father. Thank you for these decisions you provided for us, Father. We ask your guidance and wisdom to help us make the right decision that will be the best for all concerned, Father. As has been articulated to you earlier today, we pray for these drum keepers, Father, who visited before us this month. Give you the name, Jacob Lux, Gideon Gideon Jr., Bourbon Hamilton Jr., those names, those young men are put forth by the districts, their people, their families, mother and father, to be able to bring those districts together, Father. And I ask you to make a way for them. Give them contentment at the end of their time so that they can feel like they did their best and that things went well. And give them that contentment in their hearts, Father. It's a precious gift. We thank you for your blessings. We ask for your help and intervention in all things. Amen.
Amen.
We got approval of minutes. Some might say that's ancient history going back to April 18th.
Motion to approve the minutes of April 18th.
Second.
Motion made by Congressman Walker to approve the minutes from April the 18th, seconded by Speaker Pratt. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion say yes.
Yes.
Any opposed say no. Minutes are approved. Since I'm the sponsor of our legislation today, we need to...
We have a second. Second set of minutes.
Oh, a second set. My mistake. Okay. We're not done yet with that. Okay, we're at the April 24th minutes. So please take a moment to review the chair hearing motion to approve or make changes. Okay.
I move the minutes of April 24, 2017, be approved as presented. 24th, 2017, excuse me.
Second. Motion has been made by Congresswoman Whitehorn, seconded by Congressman Walker, to approve the minutes as submitted for April 24th. I will say that those are the minutes of when the nominations for chair of the committee and vice chair were made. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion say yes.
Yes.
Any opposed say no. Okay, second set of minutes. If there's no objection, I'd like to delegate the remainder of the committee to previous chairman, Congressman Walker, if the committee doesn't object. because our vice chair is not here.
Okay.
Be glad to. Next item on the agenda is ONCR 1726, a resolution to approve and authorize the execution of amendment number one to the FY 2016 to 2018 multi-year funding agreement to provide health care services of the Wajaji Health Center to otherwise ineligible non-Indians in accordance with Osage Nation law and Section 813 of the Indian Health Care Act as amended, 25 U.S. United States Code, Section 1680. The sponsor is Congressman Shaw. Congressman Shaw, you have the floor.
Thank you. You know, the health center, all the governance tribes that have an IHS compact and funding agreement, part of their goal is to augment third-party revenue because it's that revenue that's fluid, typically ramps up over a number of years to enhance services well above and beyond that was previously provided by the Indian Health Service. It was the promise of self-governance and a compact with the Indian Health Service. And I would say early on, if we're a little over the 18-month mark, that's been true, that the third-party revenue has ramped up. Well, I guess we'd love for it to ramp up further, and I have no doubt that that will happen. Occasionally, many tribes have decided to expand their service population and other third-party revenue by providing services to non-beneficiaries. Beneficiaries is a term used by the government, particularly the IHS, to identify those that are members of federally recognized tribes, which can receive treatment from the Indian Health Service. Other Indians that are not federally recognized, there may be state-recognized Indians or non-recognized Indians, are not beneficiaries. So there's this term beneficiary and non-beneficiary. Sometimes non-bens is the term used to describe. It's a shorthand term to describe non-beneficiaries. So, and that includes non-Indian people. That's a large population, even here in Osage County in Pawhuska. We have a health system that's ramping up, both with some staffing and capabilities, and not too distant future, we hope a new facility. And so one of the tools to try to further augment third-party revenue is to expand those your service population. But that would require an amendment to our multi-year funding agreement. And so that was the purpose of this resolution. Apparently there is at least one program that may see non-Indians, but it's not through the Wajaji Health Clinic. But it will allow us to bill those other third-party revenue services to increase our revenue. I have members of the Health and Wellness Division, as well as other invited guests, to be able to provide questions and answers and information for us to help make a decision as to whether you believe this is in the best interest of the Osage Nation to approve this resolution that is looking at adding an amendment, the first amendment to our multi-year funding agreement. So if I could ask for those who feel like they could speak to this, be available. No one non-invited or disinvited. You don't let the number of chairs set the number of people that can come up. Because we've got people just listening on audio and not really enough to speak.
Okay, I'm Manon Tillman. I'm the division leader for the Health and Wellness Programs. And this is something we've been, want everyone to introduce themselves first.
Oh. Candy Thomas, Director of Strategic Planning and Self-Governance.
Hello, my name is Carol Nettle. I am the president of Leader LLC, a consulting group. Nice to see you again.
Well, this was something that was discussed when we were going through the compact process, and we knew at the time we weren't ready for it, and we're not ready for it on a large scale. We'd like to start eventually on a small scale because it will require some changes in our billing system, And it will require just some overall, the revenue cycle completely. We will have to be able to identify those people in the system who are not beneficiaries in the sense that Congressman Shaw described that. We have to have other contracts in place with the Medicaid, with Oklahoma Health Care Authority. We have to be on a list with CMS at the headquarter level. I mean, there's a lot of things that have to happen in order for us to do this, but this is the first step to that process. But what it will allow us to do is to bill at a higher rate for those non-beneficiaries. Right now, we're not seeing any, but if we do have some programs that could and are, then we could bill at a higher rate for those. But they have to be, this has to be done, then we have to get on a list that identifies those programs as such, and then Medicaid recognizes those programs from that list, which allows us to do that.
Sorry, I'm the chairman, aren't I? Mm-hmm. Sleeping on the job. Any questions from the committee or Ms. Thomas or Ms. Nettle? Do you have any remarks to expand on what Ms. Tillman?
I can just make a few comments if you'd like.
Sure.
I'm not here prepared to make a presentation or anything, but I am here to, I was asked to speak a little bit about the non-beneficiary. It's a section of 813 of the Indian Healthcare Improvement Act that allows tribes to do this now. The tribes really pushed for this opportunity to be able to serve non-bens. The tribes that I know of one tribe that kind of broke the ground on this when I was still working for Indian Health Service, and that was the, the Jamestown Tsleil-Waututh Tribe in Washington. They're kind of isolated, so they serve non-beneficiaries, and they're really one of the major, or if not the only, healthcare system in the area. So they're kind of like the community health clinic, so they are authorized to do that. One of the major things, of course, if you do this, is to assure the government that in your resolution that you will not diminish services to beneficiaries. Another tribe that has worked very well for the Jamestown Tsleil-Waututh, especially in their third-party billing. I couldn't give you details, but it certainly is a tribe that you might want to speak with at some point. That's Ron Allen is the chairman of that tribe, a good friend, and been in self-governance forever. Another tribe locally in Oklahoma that does that is the Citizen Potawatomi Nation. I actually have worked with them before I worked for the IHS, and then when I, after I retired, came back and worked for them again. So they are doing it on a limited basis. They service they didn't leave it open carte blanche, but rather looked at having some type of association with their tribal members or some type of association with the tribe. So saying that, they authorized services to non-beneficiaries that were employees of the tribe. So if an employee comes there, they're not a beneficiary, they can receive services, but their insurance is billed. That's the other piece that they must pay. Spouses, I believe, of employees and that sort of thing. So the other good thing about that, I think, is that it provides some continuity of care. If you have a non-bens in one family and bens in the same family, you can all go to the same health care provider, get some type of family care provider, and the continuity of care for your family. So that is one option there. I think you have a question.
Congresswoman Whitehorn?
So what I hear you saying is that once we pass this amendment to the multi-year funding agreement, we get to define who those ineligible non-beneficiary groups are within our own healthcare system, and policy will
dictate that.
So.
That is how the Potawatomi chose to do it.
Okay.
The law allows you to do this, and how you do it is up to you, as long as you follow the law and don't diminish services.
Okay.
So it's pretty broad. It just gives you an option to do that. And when we work with tribes, we generally, when we discuss this with them, we let them know that you might want to go ahead and put it in at the onset, go ahead and pass the resolution, attach it to your funding agreement, and submit it at the same time so it's all in place. I realize you all are already in place, and that's fine because you can do it later. But the reason we do that is to give the tribe the option of having that option down the road, should they decide to do it. That doesn't mean they have to do it the next day. You know, it will be under their own terms, their own policies, how they want to do it. I think the Citizen Potawatomi Nation, in talking with those folks over there, find it very manageable. I think she said, I talked to Rhonda Butcher, who's my colleague over there, and I believe she said they settled about 10%, so it's very manageable. But it has brought in additional third-party monies as well, and as part of their third-party income, they were able to build that. They used a CDBG grant to build their West Clinic over there by the casino, the Grand Casino, but they're also used a lot of third-party income there to expand the services to the tribes, to their tribal members, if that makes any sense. So in a nutshell, that's my comment.
Congresswoman Whitehart?
I've read through the resolution and discussed this with Congressman Shaw previous to the meeting, and so I support making this change to the NIFA. Is there any more discussion, or do we want to move the legislation?
I don't have any. Congressman Norris does. Congressman Norris?
I don't have a question. I have a comment, a few comments. And I'm not new to the healthcare business, meaning health services, having served about 26 or 7 years in the healthcare with the federal government. And yeah, it's true that we have our own health system now here in the Osage, and which is a wonderful thing. One thing that I'm always a little cautious about in the early stages of any new program, which we've been in Wasatchi Health Center for about 18 months now, is there an urgency to do certain things, make certain changes in our healthcare system? And I don't like to rush into things real fast when we're talking about healthcare for our people. I certainly don't want to diminish any services given to our Indian people, and in particular our Osage people. And as I understand, the resolution, or as the law, is that we can do this so long as we do not diminish the services. And I certainly believe that we're capable of it, but I don't, whenever we make a decision on how we want to do this, if we decide to do this later on in law, I would like to see us take certain steps, maybe not jump into it 100% and just see everybody. I'd like to see maybe an MOU, MOA, or some type of an agreement with the Veterans Administration to see all the veterans first, non-Indian, or, you know, that would qualify for a veteran's health care, they would come to our clinic. And then expand upon that. See how that works first. But in regard to this resolution, I would support the resolution when it gets to the floor of Congress, but later on, whenever we start making decisions on who we're going to serve, I certainly would not want to jeopardize not getting our Indian people served first. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? Congressman Shaw?
The only thing I would say is that I would just hope that the executive branch and the health authority would, and you know, we all want to generate, it's hard to have patience to wait for some of the things we'd like to have in health. We'd like to have our own mammography imager, our own echocardiograph, and other equipment right over there today. We could have it, because we all believe our people deserve it. This is just one additional tool that could help you get there faster. It's just another tool that relates to revenue, and I have faith that health authority, the executive branch, will rein in. I'm sure they have the same exuberance towards getting there as soon as possible, to where they keep it manageable, as described by Ms. Nettle with Podwater. He's not all comers, but let's just try to keep it where it's manageable so it can't overrun us and go beyond. And, my colleague, Congresswoman Whitehorn, had asked me, you know, about giving these services going to be provided free. My understanding is likely to be, they're not written yet or approved, don't know when they become effective, they would have to have some resources before they could be seen. It's they're not seen at the same level as our beneficiaries, where the beneficiaries don't have to pay anything. But these non-beneficiaries, probably virtually every place, I don't know about the Jamestown, but they have to pay something. I don't think that's to be worked out later, but because if you don't, there's no way you cannot diminish the services. I mean, it's going to cost money to provide care, to provide medication, to provide tests. So I understand your concern. Sometimes you have a blind spot in certain things, and she helped me see that today. So anyway, I think it's a good thing. I have faith that it's not going to be implemented in a reckless fashion. It'll be calculated and due diligence to where the regulations are out there. We can move into it, you know, at a reasonable pace.
Okay, I think we're at the point where we entertain a motion for movement.
Move to report out ONCA 1777 to Congress with a due pass recommendation. Excuse me. 17 ONCR 17. I got too many things going on. ONCR 1726 with a due pass recommendation.
Second.
Okay, motion by Congresswoman Whitehorn to advance ONCR 1726 to Congress with a due pass recommendation. Seconded by Speaker Pratt. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say yes.
Yes.
Any opposed, say no. ONCR will be advanced to Congress with a due pass recommendation. The next item on the agenda is ONCA 7. Thank you. All of you would be part of the next discussion. Next item on the agenda is ONCA 1775, an act to amend ONCA 1695 to provide a supplemental appropriation to the Child, Family, and Senior Services Division in the amount of $16,193 and to establish an alternate effective date. The sponsor is Congressman Shaw. Congressman Shaw, tell us about your bill, please.
Okay. Well, I'm going to rely a lot on Child, Family, and Senior Services Director to give us some of the details, but essentially, as articulated by the Chief earlier today in his address to the Congress, that the nation has become the permanent custodian, or has permanent custody, of a teenager. And that teenager, Osage teenager, is receiving SSI benefits, also receives services, and since as the having permanent custody, the nation receives those funds and will therefore need to make payments on the child's behalf for services that he receives. And in keeping with our laws, for the Osage Nation to spend any money, even if it's from an SSI benefit, it has to be appropriated. So this is all related to the SSI funding source. None of it is tribal funds. It's not really, I don't know if I'm going to ask Mr. Potts to try to better characterize the source, because I'm maybe calling it other right now, because I don't know if it's federal or just other, but in any event, it's non-tribal, and that allows us to be able to pay expenses on that child's behalf, particularly to the facility operator that takes care of him at the group home. So Ms. Collins, she, Ms. Chairman, if it's okay, she'd come up. She's got intimate knowledge of this and could clarify further.
I guess.
I voted.
For the record, and those listening, please state your name and position.
My name is Lee Collins, and I'm only the Director of Social Services. Not the top end.
I got you. Thank you for clarifying.
Yes.
I don't know what it was.
So you want me to explain in a little more detail what we're doing? Is that what you said?
Yes, please. I mean, you don't have to go in depth, but just briefly, and then we'll fill in the gaps with questions.
Okay. Well, actually, Dr. Shaw, or Congressman Shaw, pretty well explained it. This is not tribal money. These are not federal funds granted to the nation. This is, I look at it as other. I suppose that's someone else's final decision to say what it is. But this child who is in the permanent custody of the Osage Nation until a permanent home can be found for him qualifies for SSI disability. And that just happened recently. And the funds, part of the funds, the majority of the funds will go toward his care, the cost of his care at the group home. If and when he gets to step down to a lower level of care, say therapeutic foster care or foster care, the amount paid out would lessen a little bit. But right now it's set to be at $645 a month out of the $735 a month that he will receive from SSI. The balance of $90 per month is for his personal needs and can include some entertainment. We wouldn't want it to all be entertainment, but he'll have personal hygiene needs, and maybe he wants a fancier backpack than, you know, he's being provided, or nicer shoes or something like that. You know, if he really wants something that we're already providing, we could let him do that. That wouldn't be a problem if he has the funds available. When you are awarded your SSI, they write you a letter and say you're now approved, and you're going to receive a lump sum payment back to the first month after the month of application. So he has $9,578. You'll notice that down under the non-administrative costs under other. That will be coming to him shortly. They do that in three payments, but that money has to go into what is called a dedicated account. And that is required by law and the Social Security Administration. Those funds are there for, I guess the best way to put it is, would be an extreme situation. Because we're meeting his needs. He's in our custody. We're acting as the parent. The nation is acting as the parent. So we see to his needs the best that we can, and that pretty much covers everything. But if it was a situation, and I can't really think of one at this time that he would have, that money would be there, and with the approval of Social Security, that those funds could be used for an extreme situation. It has to be approved by them too. So really what we think is going to happen to that $9,578, it's going to sit there. The other money, the $6,615 under direct services and all future income at $735 a month, is going into the general fund. And it's managed in this account, number 375. And then there's a sub-account in this child's name that accounting keeps track of, so it's separate from anybody else's or anything else that might have to go into this budget at some time. The other is in a separate account that is his. It's also in the name of the nation because we're the payee. So we believe it will sit there until he turns 18 years of age or ages out of the system, which could happen at the age of 19. You're allowed to stay in foster care at least till then in order to finish high school. So, and at that point in time, he could put it towards college, he could buy a vehicle. It's his money at that point, you know, it's his. So that's what we believe will happen to that, so it will just keep carrying over every time, every year. Unless something were to happen that we had to dip into it. But like I said, I don't know what that would be. I really don't know what that could be. Does that help you all?
Yes. Congresswoman Whitehorn?
Is this the first time we've had a situation like this where these type of payments were?
It is the first time since the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. Okay. In 2008, the last child that we had on SSI disability aged out. Mm-hmm. So this has been a dormant account since they were inactive. Our accountant refers to it as inactive. Mm-hmm. And we had to, you know, pull it back out when this happened. Okay. And reactivate it so that it could be done. And there's requirements from Social Security. You have to have a separate account. You have to do this, you have to do that, you know, to be able to manage it. And that's very understandable. We wouldn't want any possibility of anyone mismanaging his money. It's his. You know.
Right. Another question. So will we annually have to appropriate this?
Yes.
This appropriation to his account until he reaches a majority?
We will. Because it is continuing. Like, for example, the FY18 budget is $735 times 12. That's going to go in the direct services. That $95.78 will remain in the other, and then we'll get a total. The reason it's less this time is because it didn't start until after the fiscal year had begun. You know, there's only 9 months worth in there right now.
May I continue? And so I've worked in group home settings before, and the individuals that were in the group homes that I'm familiar with, they were able to have their own checking. So the portion of money that is his free money to spend that's not for his direct care, will that be deposited into his own personal checking and his staff will help him?
No. We have to make sure that he's not giving the money away. He's not, we have to, when he wants something, he will tell his caseworker what it is. we'll find out all the costs and all that. We will request a check from our accounting department and it will go straight to the vendor. Now, he can buy gift cards for himself. You know, I want to go to the movie every week, once a week, and I want to have refreshments while I'm at the movie. So he may be able to use $50 of that for his own personal use that way, but it would be a gift card.
I asked that question because I know how our process is to get a check cut, and it's kind of like, oh, that would be horrible for him to have to wait every time he had a need to wait on that. So thank you, that answered my question.
We typically get our money pretty quick, within a week. When we ask for something, we typically get it pretty quick. Because of our clients and who they are and all
correct,
that.
Correct, know. Correct. And I understand that, but I'm just thinking on a personal level.
Sure.
We want to spend something.
Right.
It's hard to wait a week to get something sometimes. But he's a child, correct?
Right, we have to be careful what he spends it on because there is an audit every year by Social Security, and we have to show proof of what all this money is spent on. And so we have to be accountable for that on his behalf.
Okay. Any other questions or comments from the committee? Congresswoman Whitehorn.
Move to report out ONCA 1775 to Congress with the due pass recommendation.
Second.
Motion's been made by Congresswoman Whitehorn to advance ONCA 1775 to Congress with the due pass recommendation. Seconded by Speaker Pratt. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say yes.
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 Any opposed say no. Okay, ONCA 1775 is advanced with the due pass recommendation. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Collins. Mm-hmm. ONCR 1724. Resolution to authorize and approve execution of a contract for treatment services or other integrated services, sole source FY18, with the State of Oklahoma Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services, and to authorize a limited waiver of sovereign immunity from suit and a consent to jurisdiction. Sponsor is Congressman Shaw. Congressman Shaw, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems like deja vu because in April we approved a limited waiver of sovereign immunity for FY 2017, 6 months into the fiscal year, or 6 months plus in the fiscal year. Part of it is because we had been allowed to begin the drug court contract even before the contract was available. Still able to get monies, but we got under fire once they were finally ready to get the limited waivers, or else we ran a risk of having the contract nullified or suspended
and perhaps money requested back. So we got that done. The Congress approved that. But now we're trying to get ahead of the curve, not be trying to catch up in a frenzy, hoping that the timing is right, that we can get it. So this is almost an identical piece of legislation, but it references FY 2018 request for limited waiver of sovereign immunity for the drug court contract between the Osage Nation and the State of Oklahoma Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services. Now my understanding is that we do not have the contract yet, okay? And is that in the language in the resolution, let me just see what we have here. So we're asking for this waiver so that we have it in place whenever the contract is provided to us. I do have, as soon as Dana comes back, I do have a copy of the.
Would you say that again, please? What you just said.
I said we do not have the FY 2018 contract yet because there typically is a delay after the start. Yeah, please come forward here. I think our support from the executive branch can give you a little more. In fact, I'd like to ask them to go ahead, if they, Mr. Chairman, to be able to fill in the blanks here, because we don't anticipate any changes in the language. In fact, there's some language in this resolution that speaks to, it has the same provisions as the FY 2017 contract. So they can't bring up a contract with different language. The limited waiver wouldn't apply because of the change in provisions, but Mr. Chairman,
okay.
So basically, no, the verbiage in the contract should not change. It will be essentially the same thing that we got this year. Yes, there is a lag from the state of Oklahoma. Usually, we've waited as long as 4 months before for the actual contract. We were well into October 1 year, and it's the state runs fiscal year June to July. And so we're coming up July 1 at the end of this current contract that we just got the waiver on last time. So the new one will be due July 1, but from what I'm hearing, it's going to be a few months before we get the actual contract in. And we're going to fill out some paperwork on it just to make sure all of our stuff is the same, and it happens every couple of years. So we're doing that today, and it will be turned in this afternoon. But the verbiage on the contract itself will not change.
Ms. Tillman?
Yeah, we did contact them and ask them if they could get us this contract before we came here. And they said they just couldn't do it. And we never know, after speaking to them, they don't even know if it's going to be a 4 month contract, a 6 month contract, or a 12 month contract. So we just get whatever they give us.
But 1 year they did 3 months at a time, 3 month increments. And I explained to them that that's hard because we have to take that to be signed every time. And so that's how the waiver was so late in getting here, and because we didn't know they were going to do a one-year contract into two parts. And the first contract that came, we did have the waiver, but by the time we got the second one, it had expired. So this one, if we can get the waiver now, then that'll take care of that problem, and that won't be an issue. However, we cannot get the contract, and I would be surprised if we got it before September at least. I would be surprised.
Congressman Shaw?
Let me just point out this language here, and I think this is something our legislative council put in there. If you look at just paragraph one, and specifically lines 56 to 58, that this limited waiver is contingent upon entering into a contract with the same provisions as the FY 2017 contract. And so that's basically to prevent some totally changed contract coming in, surprising all of us, that has different provisions. It would be non-applicable. I think we'd have to discuss it again. So I think that's probably the best we could do to try to keep us from having an unexpected surprise with substantial changes in provisions. What's happened since April that has now made the course clear that this is good for the Osage Nation Counseling Center, our services?
Well, what happened was, is we have a liaison with the Oklahoma Department of Mental Health that is specific to specialty courts. And that person had educated myself and my clinical coordinator that we in fact had to have an LADC, which is a licensed alcohol and drug counselor, in order to operate drug court. After speaking to the director of the specialty courts, we found out that we did not in fact have to have that at all. We could have a licensed professional counselor who had a scope of work in alcohol and drug, which I do have, and my whole staff is. And so all my LPCs do have a scope of work in drug and alcohol. So therefore, any of the counselors could do any of the services for drug court when we thought it was one specific licensure. And so when we thought it was the one specific licensure, which we had thought throughout every contract that Osage Nation has ever had with drug court, that was what we've always been told, is that we had to have an LADC. After talking to the director of that specialty court, we found out that that is not true, and so therefore it made it more possible for us to continue the drug court contract based on the fact that we already had staff hired that could help us with that contract.
I continue, Mr. Chairman. So did you previously have an LADC, or do you currently have an LADC?
We have had LADCs, yes, but they are very hard licensure to obtain. The test is very difficult, and there's not very many of them in Oklahoma because Oklahoma makes it very difficult to get the licensure. I have had LADCs. Penny Britton is an LADC, but she's only one person, and it takes the whole counseling staff to provide services for drug court.
So you don't have anyone right now?
We have Penny Britton.
Okay, so she's a part-time consultant, isn't she? Mm-hmm. Okay, so you don't have a full-time?
Do not have a full-time. We do not have a full-time LADC, and we are not required to have one.
Okay, understood.
Okay. So that is what is different.
So the amount of money is the same, expected to be the same?
That's what they told me.
Yeah, the money should be the same. If anything else, it could possibly be more, but we'll have to see what it says.
But it's financially more sustainable now because?
It is not required to have that licensure.
So that was the financial bugaboo.
Yes, we could not find an LADC. I had tried it part-time. I had tried it to run it contractually. I had tried it to do it full-time. We could not find anyone that would come and do this in Pawhuska. And from what I understand from the licensure board and from ODMHs is that it's very hard to get that licensure. It's a hard test. Not many people try to get it. Most of them can do counseling with the LPC or LMLFT, which is Licensed Marriage and Family Counselor. So they don't go for that.
If you just give me half a minute to move a little further away, do we have any LADCs in any of our drug treatment programs?
Yeah, Penny. Penny Britton is our...
We don't have any full-time
people
with that credential. They're hard to get for any of our positions.
Anyone in Oklahoma, not just us. The licensure board is saying it's hard to get it in Oklahoma, period. Very few. I mean, we can go onto the database and pull up how many there are, and there are not many. And so that is something that we did look at.
And Samuel Alexander and I went to visit with 12 in Tulsa. And the same issues are there that we have. They just say they're just not there. So we're trying to think of ways we can maybe work with them to do something to share, or even do some tele-counseling possibly. I mean, just some way. She's got an advertisement out now for one, and she's had a couple of people that she's talked to.
They closed out this week.
But one was from another state, so they're licensed that way in another state, but when they come to Oklahoma, we don't accept that. So then they've got extra education, so many extras they have to go through in our state to get to that we require.
Congresswoman Whitmore.
I just want to go back to the discussion about the language that Congressman Shaw pointed out about 56, I think that's what Senator said. Mm-hmm.
758.
Right. Sole source FY18 and contingent on entering into a contract with the same provisions as FY17. All I want to do is be assured that once the new contract comes in, you guys will have a nation's attorney review that, make sure it is the same thing.
Yes, it goes to the AG's office.
Right, so, and that they will know that that language, yes, as a provision, is in this resolution.
Sure, make sure.
Like in the sovereign immunity, just so we don't have any glitches. I just wanted that assurance, but I'm good to go on this also, unless there's any more discussion.
Speaker Pratt?
I know. All right, and then I move to report 007-24. Congress with the Duke's recommendation.
Second.
Motion's been made by Speaker Pratt to move OMCR 1724 to Congress with the Duke's recommendation, seconded by Congresswoman Whitehorn. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say yes.
Yes. Yes.
Any opposed say no. Okay, OMCR 1724 will be advanced to Congress with the Duke's recommendation. That brings us to adjournment.
Motion to adjourn, second.
Motion to adjourn by Congresswoman Whitehorn. Seconded by Speaker Pratt. Any discussion? Seeing none.
Thank you.
All in favor of adjourning say yes.
Yes. Yes.
We are adjourned. Thank you, committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Committee.
Good job.
Okay.
Got it.
Yeah.
Make it
happen.
Okay. So, is that all that was assigned, or do you?